Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Well, James, we have a pretty interesting and slightly different topic today, and I'm really excited to see where this podcast will take us. So today we are welcoming Michael Dare, the owner of Zenden, who specialises in traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture.
Yeah, welcome, Michael. It's, I'm glad to have you here, and I know we have a lot of mutual patients, so very excited to hear about and learn what you have to say.
Yeah, thanks, Oz. Thanks for the invite, and thanks for having me here. Excited to have a chat. I know we share a lot of clients, so hopefully this will help.
Fantastic. And so that's great to know that you've got some mutual patients and that's how you've come to get to know each other. And it all comes back to where we're really finding so many practitioners who have that holistic approach to healthcare, where really wanting to help point clients in the right directions with other professionals who can assist them. So, Michael, to kick us off, can you give us a bit of an overview of exactly what it is that you do and some of the history of traditional Chinese medicine?
Yeah, for sure. I run a clinic in Townsville City here. I sort of class myself as like a traditional practitioner, so I use all the elements within the Chinese medicine, so classical style acupuncture. I use a lot of the traditional Chinese herbs or the TCM herbs. Also incorporate a little bit of tuina, like the massage style, some food therapy and exercise therapy as well, which sort of looks at all the branches of the Chinese medicine. So I like to class myself as a classical or a old school Chinese medicine practitioner by using all those areas of practice to try to get the best result, I guess.
Fantastic. And I think we all kind of have a bit of an idea, but can you just break down for us, explain what acupuncture actually is?
Yep. So the history of acupuncture in Chinese medicine is, it's a really flowery sort of history, because a lot of our books are written thousands. Well, initially they thought our earliest text was about 2,500 years BC. But what they're finding recently is that the books that we use now, like it's all based on what they call the Yellow Emperor's Classic or the Nei Jing, which is our first sort of, classic textbook on the use of acupuncture and the use of Chinese medicine and how we view the body from an acupuncture world. There's sort of been signs, like there's a frozen body they found from 3,000 or 4,000 years ago that had signs of maybe acupuncture done to him, like markings on his body. There's been pictograms and some old scrolls that might sort of suggest the use of acupuncture thousands and thousands of years ago. But it wasn't really until the Yellow Emperor's Classic came out that we was the first sort of actual reference of acupuncture. And basically what they're finding with that, they sort of, like I said, initially they dated it at about 2,500 BC. But what they're finding is that the pictures they use in there and the style of writing maybe might have put it back more to about 500 to 600 BC. The part that made it, confusing with dating was the use of the Yellow Emperor. So the book is basically based on this conversation between the Yellow Emperor, who is a mythical emperor, and that's where they got confused about the timeline, because nobody could date when the Yellow Emperor existed. But what they've sort of coming to is the use of the terminology and the pictures and the style of writing that puts it probably more about that 500 BC. And basically it's a conversation between the Yellow Emperor and his physician Chi Po. And what they would do, the Yellow Emperor would ask Chi Po a question and the Chi Po would answer in this, because it's an old sort of style text, this flowery poetic language like that. For example, the Yellow Emperor might ask Chi Po about fertility, what happens to create fertility. And Chi Po will go on about how, you know, the heart blood must be nourished and flourished and overflowing to nourish the palace or the celestial palace, which is basically their terminology for the uterus. So people then get sort of developed all these different schools of thought. Well, you know, for the heart blood to be nourished, we might have to tonify the spleen to do the blood. So it's all about this really flowery answers, which sort of, I guess, has given rise to different schools of thought on how to treat. But the good thing about the Yellow Empress Classic is it sort of gives us the guidelines of how the body interacts with the environment, the emotions. And so it's our Bible on basically how we view the body systems. So then all books sort of expanded on from there. Like I said, it was the first one where they talked about acupuncture was actually written in a prescription model. There's been all sorts of speculations or theories on how acupuncture actually developed, like where it actually came from. There was the old school one of, you know, somebody got shot in the leg by an arrow and their headache became better. But basically what we're finding, that the most plausible one at this stage is probably the whenever an emperor would enter a room, his shamans would enter the room first and spear the air with spears and knives to chase out the evil spirits, so the emperor could come into a room that's sort of been cleansed. And often a lot of the old acupuncture terminology is about removing or expelling evil pathogenic wind or evil blood in the body. So they're finding that that's probably the most plausible explanation of where acupuncture originated, is from shamans clearing the room for the emperor. There's still speculations on exactly, because it's a hard thing to know exactly what. But what we're sort of finding now, and with more research and MRI stuff, that we're finding that acupuncture really sort of works from a Western perspective on the nervous system. Some of the nervous system points that we use and directly influence the nerves. Some have a flow-on effect where it'll influence the nervous system, then a brain pattern, and then it'll release a hormone effect. So they're finding that acupuncture has an effect on the nerves, has an effect on hormone balances. They're still trying to work out the exact mechanism of hormone balance stuff, but that's, in a nutshell, I guess that's what, from a Western perspective, that's what the acupuncture is working on, is the nervous system. Classically, we talk about meridians and channels, and that's what we sort of focus on for an acupuncturist perspective. But yeah, that's where the pins or the acupuncture sort of sits at the moment.
Yeah, so it's like where you're putting those pins or needles into specific parts of the body. Mm. And so what you're finding is it's all very much connected with the nervous system and different hormones and things like that.
Yeah. So there's often, like, a lot of the points that we use are above, like, intersection of nerves or where nerves branch. Like, they seem to be not just only on, like, just a random section of the nerve, but it seems to be influential parts of the nervous system is where they seem to, where the acupuncture points generally sit above.
So. Yeah, and so, you know, certainly very important to have a skilled and well-trained acupuncturist doing this treatment. Mm. You know, a lot of people, I think, perhaps have this perception that it might be painful or scary. Can you talk us through what a treatment looks like when you're doing it?
Yeah, for sure. The tricky thing with acupuncture and pain-wise, like classically in the Chinese perspective, we have four words that we use for acupuncture sensations. Only one of them is pain. So if that one is bad, that's the one we stay away from. So generally what we try to do, we're looking for sensations when we needle, classically. There's different schools of thoughts now with the Japanese style, or Korean style. Dry needling's arise and sort of different sort of style of, I guess, needling. But classically we're looking for subtle sensations like a warming or a heavy or a dull or sometimes a radiating sensation. But the whole sharp, stabby sort of sensation is the one that classically, that's one that we avoid, because that sort of lets us know that we're somewhere that we probably shouldn't be. So,
yeah.
So it's a good time to re-angle and change the pin. So generally when you do a treatment, you have to assess the person that you're dealing with. Some people are more sensitive than others. So we have a whole bunch of, well, I have a whole bunch of different thicknesses of needles that I use. There's different techniques within acupuncture you can use based on somebody's sensitivity levels, I guess. So some people you really need to be heavy-handed with. Some people you need to be really gentle. The results are the same because it depends on somebody's, I guess, sensitivity or energy that we work with, on how receptive they are to the different needling styles.
Yeah, right. Okay, great. So that's a really interesting breakdown of what the acupuncture is. So James, tell me, what's your kind of understanding of TCM and how that kind of fits in and complements what you do?
Yeah, so I think there's obviously a bit of an overlap because it does look at that holistic sort of care. So, you know, Michael talked about, you know, the emotional health and, you know, so there's a lot of stress involved with a lot of people. And, you know, again, there's sort of five factors that we're talking about. So, you know, gut health being a big part of that. And when I was sort of saying before the podcast that when we look at a lot of the medicines, they're actually, even though the terminology is different. So if I look at a traditional Chinese medicine bottle, like the other than maybe being in Chinese, it's also all the herbs are, I guess, listed differently. And there's quite a few different herbs, you know, in that within that formula. But when I look them up and, you know, I sort of realize that they're different names for herbs that we might already use. So there is a big overlap in the sense of some of the nutrients that we'd use. And obviously, I'm sure Mike will go into it, but my understanding around Chinese medicine is a lot like it's talking about around blood flow and, you know, getting the kidneys into working properly. And it's talking about different energies. So, you know, I'm pretty sure there's like, again, Michael can correct me, but there's like warming formulas and cooling formulas. So I guess it's a completely different style in many ways, but there's still similar overlap. You know, we might be, if someone's, you know, quite stressed and anxious, we might be trying to calm them down to allow, you know, the body's natural processes to take place. Or we might, you know, if they're flat and tired, we might be trying to pick them up in certain ways. So, yeah, I think that's how it sort of overlaps.
So, yeah, the way we treat, I guess, classically to modern treatment approaches, it's still basically using the same theories, even though we're seeing rises and falls of different classical diagnosis, but the theories are still the same. Like James said, basically what we deal with from a TCM practice is the balance of like qi and blood or yin and yang. There's some five element stuff that we can mention as we go along. So that's still relevant today as it was in the past. It's just the balance of the qi and blood, yin and yang is changing depending on the pathologies that we're seeing nowadays.
Can you talk us through that? That you've mentioned that balancing the yin and yang. Can you talk us through what that means?
Yep. So when we look at an organ system, so say if somebody comes in, so stress is a nice classic one. So if somebody comes with the stress. So often we look at the organs that might influence that, and the key one there is the liver. So each organ system basically has a yin and yang aspect to it and a qi and blood aspect to it. So what we do is look at that particular organ system and what it's mainly governed by. Like the liver is the main organ that we look for moving qi or moving energy. But with that, it sort of helps with the movement of blood as well. But its key characteristic is the movement of qi or movement of blood. So often if there's a lot of stress or tension in the body, that constriction of the energy can cause issues, whether it be on the blood flow or just tension building up in the body. So we use that organ system to move the qi or move the blood that way. The yin and yang in balance as well. Each organ system, like each organ basically has like a yin or yang aspect to it. So the yin is the nourishing aspect of that organ. The yang is the more the functional, the movement aspect of that organ. And then when we see, like if the liver yin becomes deficient, it'll give rise to like liver yang. And that's when you get those really angry, red hot face people because the yin has become deficient, and as the yang is now out of control because the balance of yin and yang is out of line. So this gives rise to what we call excess yang, which then the liver yin isn't able to control liver yang anymore. So you get this rise of this angry energy. And like I said, that's where your key characteristics there is those people that have that angry outburst where their head goes red because all that hot energy is running up to the to the top part of the body.
And so how does that then translate for hormonal imbalances? Because I believe that's something that you treat a lot of patients well.
Yep. And same again, I guess the liver is one of the classic organ systems for that. Liver classically from an acupuncture perspective, it looks after the free flow of qi and blood in the body. We see it as the main organ that sort of governs the hormonal balance as well. So when we're treating hormonal imbalances, often it's used to like there's a liver element, and then we look at, well, if the blood's deficient in a hormonal, like with amenorrhea, or what we look at then is, well, if the blood's deficient, then we've got to use the liver to help move the blood, but then we might need to nourish the blood by looking at the spleen or the heart to help nourish the blood and move it that way. Sometimes for people with like adrenal exhaustion or their embryo quality is low, then we look at, well, we still need to use the liver to help move that energy, but then we'll add in kidney stuff because the kidneys help govern the constitutional energy. So if somebody's for a guy, if their sperm quality is low, or for females, if their AMH levels are low, then we look at the adding the kidney into there as well. So when we look at hormones, most of the times it'll be a liver plus something, and that's the balance that we're trying to create. And that's the complexity of people is, and that's where we look at that yin-yang, qi and blood. You know, we know the liver is involved, but what other organ systems are involved? And this is where, I guess, the complexity of the Chinese medicine, the way they put everything together, it's a really nice sort of system of interactions between the body and the world and the emotions and the environment. But we know that for certain conditions, there's a key element or key organ system, but it's understanding all the other things that influence that organ system that gives us a better result. So, you know, if I nail that liver part of it all, I'm like, well, I'm going to have an influence, but if I nail it on the head by knowing which other organ systems or which other parts are involved, then my result is going to be way better than just focusing on the liver.
Wow, that's fascinating. And James, I know that today is quite the education for you as well in all this. So how's all this sitting with you and how it complements what you're doing with the work you do with patients?
Yeah, I think it's very useful because I think the more holistic we can approach things, the better we are helping our patients. And so to, I guess, hear it from a different perspective to how I would normally approach things is pretty cool. And I think there's not certainly, only one way to do things, and there's lots of ways to do things. And I've got a question for Michael, actually, because I was curious, if you're seeing someone with, say, they've got fertility issues and you're talking about working out which area that you would need to focus on, is that through asking questions, or are you looking at physical signs and symptoms and things that, I guess, would cue you? Or is it, you might, I don't know, say put a needle in and based on the response that happens, how does that guide what you do? Do you have to ask a lot of questions, or is the body telling us?
Yeah. Definitely a lot of questions involved and distinctifying questions as well. Say for like with painful periods, we ask, with that pain, people's, is it a dull pain? If it's a dull pain, it might be more of a qi stagnation. Or if it's a sharp and stabbing pain, it might be more of a blood stagnation. So once you're trying to unfold this onion, we start off the initial what we think it might be going on, and then you ask questions to confirm that. If it's a blood stagnation, that we should see signs like the tongue should be purple, or there should be people with are better with movement. So as opposed to with a qi stagnation, maybe their energy level is a little bit low, or they're not sleeping so well. So generally we ask a series of questions to try to work out, push it one way more than the other. Is it more qi, or is it more blood? Is it more yang involved? And with that, so we'll start off by asking a series of questions, look at people's complexion, are they pale, or are they yellow, or they, you know, weak in the muscle tissues. We use the tongue and pulse a lot as well. So the tongue gives us an idea. What we look for in the tongue is the colour, the shape and the coat. So that can give us indications whether or not we're on the right track or not. If somebody comes in and I suspect like a blood stagnation, I check somebody's tongue and it's really pale and swollen, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm off the mark. So it prompts you to ask other questions. And same with the pulse. With the pulse, we're looking for different qualities in the pulse. You know, does it hit hard or is it a really weak pulse? Classically, with pulse diagnosis, there's different positions. We always check the left and the right. The right pulse is more the yang pulse. So with that, we have the lung, the spleen, and the kidney yang. So there's three different. You'll generally see a practitioner use three fingers when they check the pulse. So what we're doing there is checking organ systems as well. What we're looking for is just subtle differences in those positions. Like on the left side of the pulse is the yin and blood pulse. So we've got the heart, the liver, and the kidney yin. So we're just trying to feel if there's something in those positions that sort of indicate that we're on the right track. And then if you find something different in the tongue or pulse, like I said, it prompts us to ask more questions. We ask people emotional questions about, you know, relationships, food questions about what they're eating, exercise questions, what sort of exercises they're doing. But a lot of it's to do about, you know, how's your sleep? You know, do you get to sleep easily? Or once you are asleep, is there a dream disturbed or a light sleep? All those little questions. We have key responses that we're looking for to let us know that we're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so just you touched on, you know, the questions about food and nutrition and things like that. So at what point are you kind of then referring a patient to a nutritionist or functional practitioner like James?
I like to refer a bit with a, like I have a crew that I like to refer to, and, mm-hmm. and James is definitely part of that crew. Just to get the best result for people, I like to use people that their expertise is way better than mine. So if in a situation where I find that somebody's, you know, they their nutrition might be better addressed, or they might need different supplements to what I can offer, then I'll definitely look at using, you know, referring of James. Musculoskeletal wise, I'll see some people that I think their spine might be out, and that's out of my scope of practice. So then I've got a few chiropractors that I like to refer to. Maintenance stuff, I like to use, you know, exercise physiologists and massage people as well. I find if I have a team working on somebody, the result is way better. And also I find people appreciate the fact that you're willing to, you know, you're not afraid to sort of have somebody else share your client or to ask somebody else for help. I think people really appreciate the fact that you have a team of people that you use to aid with their treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been the really fun thing we're discovering in season two of this podcast series, where we're inviting all James's friends along to have a chat. We're really seeing that growing crew, as you described it, of practitioners who want to bring others in on the patient journey. You know, like you said, where they're identifying that that's not their area of expertise and there's someone who can really help them. And then it ultimately really complements the treatment that you're doing so you can get the best results. So it's quite exciting to see. And hopefully for our listeners, it really inspires them too to find those practitioners that are willing to work collaboratively with others for those holistic health outcomes. So, yeah, that's great.
Michael, would there be someone that, or I guess is there an example of a particular condition where you think that, I guess, you know, TCM is really like wonderful for? Is there like, is it fertility that you think it's just, you know, TCM is the way to go, or is there, you know, is it pain, or is there a particular field or style of client that you think just really, really responds really well?
Yeah, for sure. In my practice, and I think people it's easy to find now if you do a bit of research, but fertility in the acupuncture world is up there as far as things that we treat. If I look at percentage-wise of my treatments that I see in a day, I'd sort of say 40% of the people I see are for some sort of pain-related thing, like be it neck or shoulders or back or tennis elbow. Then 40% would be female or women's health, be that menopause, infertility, IVF support. I see a lot of clients with at the end of pregnancy for, I don't like to use the word induction because we're just helping with labour preparation, but it's sort of, there's been some good research out there to show, and it's easy for people if they're searching now to see, and especially in the fertility realm, that there's a lot of good research published on acupuncture and its effect on the hormones. And that's a complex area. It's an area I really like to work in because I really enjoy the complexity of it all. But I think one of the good things that I'm doing, one of the things I'm good at is chilling people out. So I think just that in itself, you know, the style that I do, my clinic environment is really good for just chilling people out. So if I can have that effect on fertility, I think that's a massive area. Also, you know, like I said, that can combine with our points that we use for hormones. For me, it's a massive area. And probably the other 20% of the stuff that I see is miscellaneous stuff, you know, tinnitus or sinus. I see some thyroid issues, some stuff when it comes to gut and certain hormones. I find that's where I like to refer people on to James or yourself, because I find that some other forms of medicine are better treating some hormone or sort of issues. But I think, well, globally, acupuncture in the fertility realm is probably one of our massive markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Michael, some of the guests that we've spoken to on this podcast series, and in particular Dr. Matt, a psychologist, we really spoke about, like, you know, the connection between gut and brain and things like that. Can you give us your thoughts on how emotions might impact physical health?
Yeah, for sure. One of the cool things that I always dug about the TCM is they never really separated emotions from the physical. Classically it's the same. You know, like if we look at the five element theory is the classic one that sort of helps us, I guess, group or categorize the emotions to a particular organ system. So it gives us an organ system to treat with. So like I said before, classically we have the, you know, qi, blood, yin and yang, which sort of describes organs, but the influence on each organ. But then the five elements theory is a really awesome way of, I guess, categorizing or lumping foods, emotions, colors, all sorts of things to a certain organ system. You know, the five elements that we look at is the fire, and it goes in this order because there's a treatment principle that we use on this, but basically like the fire, the earth, the metal, the water, the wood. So in each of those systems, there's a different emotion attached to that system. Like, you know, the heart has the heart belongs to the fire organ, and that's the one for joy. So if somebody has too much energy in that that element, that fire element, that can lead to like mania where they have too much joy, their brain's overactive, where somebody might have like anxiety or depression, where the energy in that fire element is depleted, so they have the lack of joy. So then we can start to look at, well, each of those element systems has an emotion attached to it. My favorite one is the liver and spleen disharmony, or the wood and earth disharmony. There's a system within the five element theories that's sort of given rise to different schools of thought. So with each one of those elements, we have a mother-son cycle and then a grandmother-grandson cycle. So the mother-son cycle looks at the nourishing aspect. So you know, the heart will help nourish the fire will help nourish the earth will help nourish the metal, and so on. So we're looking at like the heart helping nourish the spleen nourishing the lung. So that's the mother-son cycle. And then we have what we call the grandmother-grandson cycle, which is like a controlling or constricting cycle, where it sort of skips one. So it's not necessarily the mother-son cycle. It'd be the so the metal would control the earth, so it would skip over the fire cycle and control the earth. So this is where we see a lot of constricting or controlling cycles. And sorry to all those grandmothers out there, but a lot of the old terminology they use within Chinese medicine is either based on warring positions where they're talking about emperors and generals, or a lot of old terminology like that, or mother sons disharmonies. So like I said, no bad intentions to any grandmothers or mothers out there, but it's just the old school terminology that they use from a language 2,500 years ago. But yeah, my favorite one is the one I see a lot of, or one I can I guess recognize easily, is the wood and earth imbalance, and that sort of falls into the irritable bowel sign of thing, where you got the energy of the liver constricting the smooth movement of the digestive system. So then we look at stress and tension and its effect on the gut. It's constricting all those smooth peristaltic movements, or those smooth muscle movements that the gut relies on. It constricts the energy or the ability for the gut to sort of break down, and then weakens the spleen energy, and then the ability for the spleen to get the energy from the food becomes lessened because it's over controlled. So that's a nice classic sort of example of like the emotions, I guess, affecting the body in a physical way. This grandmother grandson based on the five element theory of how it controls or constricts.
So you're really working to help get that patient all back in balance, so everything's just kind of humming along nicely again.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where we look at our treatment principles. I know James like to talk about the root of problems, and this is where we look at the root and branch. For a lot of liver spleen disharmonies, the root of the problem is the liver is constricted. That anger or tension has restricted the ability for the spleen to get the energy from the food or break the food down. So then we look at, the root of the problem is the liver, but the branch is what's showing is people coming in with all these gut health issues. So at what balance do we do by treating the branch of the problem is like trying to stimulate their gut, as opposed to like moving the root of the problem is the liver. So often a lot of our treatment principles or formulas are based on what the practitioner thinks. Like in a treatment, I generally like to use this old school 70-30 system. 30% of the treatment might be focused on the root, and then 70% of the treatment might be focused on the branch of the problem, like the presenting part of the problem. If I'm not happy with that way, maybe I'll flip it around and do just 30% on the presenting problem and 70% on what I think is the root of the problem. And that's how we try to formulate our treatment approaches, I guess.
Yeah. And so when you're then treating someone, does the length of time vary that you might need to be seeing a patient for to get to that root cause of the problem?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it's, we're complex beings. So sometimes to get down to that root of the problem can take a few treatments of just clearing stuff away until you can finally see something. Somebody will say something or suggest something, or you'll see something and go, oh, that's where it's coming from. So sometimes that can take a few treatments just to work that out. Like I said, for myself, the liver spleen disharmony is one I see a fair bit, so I can generally spot it pretty quickly. But some other conditions, if there's a kidney and heart disharmony, sometimes it might take a few times of treating things with people saying, oh, well, I felt a little bit better, but maybe not as better as I would have liked to see them. So then I might change something or ask them some other questions. And then they'll say that key word that we're looking for. You go, that's what it is. And then you'll find your treatment will be more effective. How many treatments that takes? Well, depends on how easy it is to see stuff sometimes. Sometimes it can be cloudy.
But ultimately, it sounds like you're a little bit like James, where you're almost trying to make yourself a little bit redundant in the patient's journey, in that by getting to that root cause of the issue, You're able to, you know, really treat those symptoms and that root cause so that they then are in a much better position health-wise.
Yeah.
And so we've talked a lot about sort of the theory of everything. Do you guys have, I guess, an example of sort of like a case study of a patient who has benefited from that holistic approach with the acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine combined with, you know, the nutritional side of things?
Yep. Certainly with mutual patients, for example, they might have something like polycystic ovarian syndrome where they're not quite ovulating. And I know, you know, from experience that Michael might be great at getting that person to ovulate all of a sudden. And then it might be, you know, sort of up to me to help work on egg quality. So if Michael's improving blood flow and things like that and the nourishing side, and I might come in with some nutrients that I know are really, really effective for improving egg quality, or, you know, it just might be nutritional deficiencies that, you know, that we can correct, that sort of complement each other, and it works out quite nicely. And I'm sure Michael's got plenty of success stories in the fertility space, and I think that's a really cool thing to work on, especially from a non-standard traditional way. I'm quite certain that often, you know, if you're talking to your GP or your doctor or specialist about fertility, you know, thinking about acupuncture or Chinese medicine mightn't be the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, I think it's like polycystic is a classic example where I think we work together. I think that acupuncture is good for sort of like stimulating movement there, but we need the ability to sort of support and strengthen some of the hormone balances, and that's where I find the more Western nutritional or supplement ranges are more effective than some of the old school Chinese medicine ones, especially with hormones. Hormones are such a, not to use the word complex again, but they are such a complex thing to deal with. There's so many influences that I find we need support for different. I think the support that James can offer with some of his supplements, especially for like, you know, early stage pregnancy care and. The mineral supplements, you know, the TCM doesn't necessarily have a lot of mineral supplements that we use.
I think that's so exciting. And as I mentioned earlier, I think just that willingness to look outside your own area of expertise and find those complementary practices. So, well, it's certainly been a very enlightening chat. James, do you feel like you've learnt lots in this chat as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. My mind boggles. I wonder if I should go and see Michael myself.
I know, I'm thinking of making an appointment too. I have had acupuncture before and I really benefited from it, and that was for helping with, quite significant PMS. So, I definitely do have seen the results firsthand. So, Michael, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, so obviously you do have a clinic here in Townsville, Zenden. Do you do work with some of your recommendations with traditional Chinese medicine online, or is it mostly in clinic?
Mostly in clinic. Basically, we need to see somebody. We need to. James is awesome at reading blood tests and results like that. We need to physically see somebody, check their tongue, check their pulse, look at their complexion, look how they walk in. So I often have people ask me, oh, my friend's got this, can you recommend some herbs? I'm like, yeah, I could, but it's best if they just pop in, just so, some people have a certain smell. You know, there are all sorts of things that we're trying to look for, you know, that whole holistic approach. So it's best for people to book in. If somebody just is unsure, they're welcome just to pop into the clinic and just ask me. You know, and I like to be honest if I can help or not. Sometimes I say, you know, somebody's better than that at I am. So it's best for if people want to know more, it's best to pop in and see. But people are welcome just to pop in. You don't have to make an appointment. But if you want a treatment, you can book through our website. It's all the booking systems there, a lot of info is there.
Amazing. So that's the Zenden in Townsville. Yeah. If someone isn't in Townsville, they're listening from somewhere else, what would you recommend that people look for when they are looking for an acupuncturist or someone specialising in traditional Chinese medicine?
Yeah. Key thing is they belong to the association, the ACMA, the Australian Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine Association. They're a key governing body. They're really strict and tough on who they let in the association. So if somebody is in the association, you know, at least they've had the right education and they theoretically should have the right tools to help.
Amazing advice. All right. Well, I think that wraps up today. Thank you, Michael, for joining James and I.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Hope that was helpful.
Yeah, it's good.
I think it was really helpful, and I hope it has helped some of our listeners with their health journey. So awesome. Until next episode, cheers. See you
thanks.
Later.
Thanks, bye. Again, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.